Vigilantes. We are here starting off the new year in the best way that I can fathom. And that's by having someone to represent the BTC camp of Bitcoin. Bitcoin itself, the leader in the space. And for that reason, I brought up on board my favorite BTC Bitcoiner, Paul Storks. And the reason why he's my favorite BTC Bitcoiner is because he has never given up on BTC and on scaling Bitcoin through a Hayekian process of seeing what could be possible on chain. And so, Paul, great to have you here. I'm so happy you're here. Our first guest of the year. How are you?
Oh my God. Thanks for having me.
So Yeah, you're very welcome. I'm really happy you're here. And so a lot of people don't know about you, but let me take the liberty to kind of tell them about your story. Is that okay?
Yes, although I'm getting nervous.
Oh, okay. So Paul found himself with the desire of creating a decentralized predictions market called Bitcoin Hive Mind. At a time, it was known as Truthcoin. Okay. Truthcoin, yes. When we had the scaling wars, the civil wars within Bitcoin, Blockstream promised sidechains. We were all very excited.
It happened to have promised that 2014. It was kind of like the scaling war, as you know, was like a slow thing that had been building up. It had been growing geometrically from 2012 to 2016 when it became a giant battle, the end of 2016. So they kind of did it before or during or whatever. But yeah, that's true. It's true that they did do that. They promised that October 2014.
Yeah. So we never really got those side chains. And Paul was kind of wait a minute. This is what we were waiting for, to scale Bitcoin in a way that was entrepreneurial driven, market driven. And so he set out to create his own side chains. And that was the project of Drive Chains. And you've been working on it for 3 years now, right?
Yes. Well, I wrote the post November 2015, a long time ago. So that's 7 years ago. But I didn't really do any work on it, or 6.5 years ago. That post was kind of just I don't know what is taking Blockstream so long. Scaling was never a goal of the idea, but it was. I just observed that people who wanted large blocks, they were okay with SPV mode. The sidechains used SPV proofs. So there was a way, I observed that with sidechains, there was a way for everyone to get what they wanted. The small blockers could have small block Bitcoin and not be bothered by the large blocks of the large blockchain, and the large blocker people could have their own large blocker version of Bitcoin. It'd be the same Bitcoin, same 21 million coins, just traveling among these networks. So I was why don't we just do this? This was November 2015, and then everyone could be happy. And obviously that never happened because people just got more and more miserable. So obviously they didn't take my idea. I think everyone would have been better off. Everyone would have been much better off if they had.
Right.
But it was only an idea in November 2015. I didn't really start putting a lot of time into it because I was more interested in the prediction markets thing, the idea at the time. And I'm still kind of more interested in that, but one war at a time, right? So
yeah.
So I didn't really start working on it for a little while, but now it's probably... it was probably 2017 with Blind Merge Mining and the hash rate escrows, the BIPs. So yeah, it's probably been 3 or 4 years.
Wow. So if you could please explain a little bit to everyone watching, a lot of people have not heard of this. And what I see, guys, what I see as a big blocker, because I'm a big blocker when it comes to the whole Bitcoin debate, I see drive chains or side chains, whatever you want to call them, as the way by which we can have Bitcoin express itself in different ways on chain by miners. So I like the example that Paul Storks has you've used a very good example in the past you're in a party and you want to move to another room, or you want to move to, you know, or people want to move to another room, it's still the same party. You're just experimenting with different block sizes in different chains, correct?
Yeah, the problem is no one wants to have to leave the party because it's too much of a risk. Like, people just stay. They don't want to go where other people are. So this is a metaphor for network effects. The most important thing, if you go to like a nightclub or a party or whatever, you want to know, you know, is there going to be food? Is there going to be drinks? Is there going to be entertainment? But really, you want to know who else is going to be there. That's the big draw. You know, that's why the Met Gala is such a big deal. That's why, you know, whatever it is, White House Correspondents Dinner, you know, because the president is there. So that the other people who are there make the party. And you don't want to be in a position of just trying to herd the cats, you know, shepherd people around at the party, because people are just going to do whatever they want to do at the party. And right. God bless them. That's why I've always tried to give everyone what they want, because I think that's, to me, not only is that like, you know, I would think that that would just be easier, but more practical and sort of more moral, right? But also, I just think it's kind of more scientific in a way. Like, people have decided what they want, and they should be able to try whatever it is that they strikes their fancy or whatever. They have an inkling to try something. So I always try to do that, but most people are not really interested in that. They instead, I don't know why, but that's not
really weird.
That'll make you a lot of enemies, because people instead want to say this was the right way for everyone.
Right. So here, it's just to back up a little bit for everyone that was not part of the Bitcoin Civil Wars. We were fighting back and forth whether we should increase the block size or not. So the side chain drive chain idea was like, well, why don't we just try both at the same time? Let's have a side chain that is of a bigger block size, and we can experiment with creating an economy on chain, and we can remain with with the mainnet being a smaller one megabyte with SegWit chain.
Easier to verify.
Yeah.
Although at the time, of course, it didn't have SegWit, you know. SegWit wasn't even finished. The code wasn't even finished until October 2016. So this was long before SegWit. This was even before Scaling 2, because Scaling 2 was December 2015. And that was when people sort of agreed that SegWit would be the SegWit block size increase would be the thing to do. And the weird thing is, the small blockers were in favor of a block size increase, which led to all kinds of other kind of like confusing. The whole thing is very confusing. It's not confusing to me, but it's just confusing to explain, because I think really it was so inconsistent. And I think part of the pushback against this idea was that people just genuinely didn't believe it was possible. I think it was Mr. Hoddle on Twitter like last month. Like, I think it was like last month. So we're talking 2021, more than 6 years after I wrote this post and pitched this idea that you've explained. They were saying stuff on Twitter, and someone said something like, yeah, but the side chains are not like a block size increase. You know, the main layer one Bitcoin would just ignore the side chain. And they were saying something like that's not true. Even though he's wrong about that, it was exactly true. So he was exactly wrong. And this is a fundamental idea that the small block people would get their own thing, and they would not be bothered by it. They would not need to care at all about what was happening in the large block network. But people still don't know that, I guess. So I don't know. You know, I think the idea is so novel that actually people have a hard time even wrapping their heads around it. But you know, you and I seem to get it.
it's wild to me, because when we started having these debates, and it was like 2014 when we really started ramping up. I remember being asked to help with the funding of Blockstream, and the pitch was the side chains that you've built. That was what they were pitching to investors. That's the pitch I got
when I was part of the debate. I'll post about this. I have to often link people to the Reid Hoffman LinkedIn like post, where he explains it very clearly. And it's very well written, and it's great. And he says all the things. He says, Bitcoin is open source, but you aren't actually free to make all these changes because of the way consensus works, and people want to be creative and try new things, but other people don't want to be bothered by new mistakes that might be made, and they prefer something to be conservative. So he like explained all the whole sidechains idea like perfectly. And then he says, like, that's why I, he says, like, that is exactly why I created, funded Blockstream or whatever. And so, yeah, that was always the thing. And then over time, as they, you know, they have shifted the narrative for a couple, which we could get into, because I think I understand why that happened. But I mean, ultimately, the only thing that's relevant for the audience is that they did not, they sort of changed their mind about what they were interested in, I guess.
And that's interesting because the whole idea was that they were going to build the sidechain as a way for us to experiment what would be market driven, for us to figure out in a market driven way how best to scale Bitcoin.
I don't know if they saw it that way, which is, I think if they did see it that way, they probably wouldn't have given up on it. They don't really see it as, so like I see it as slightly more subversive, you know, like I see it as a way of recovering from a mistake made by the current dev team or whatever. So when the whole block size war started, I was like, oh, this is great, because it's a perfect example of something that each side considers the one decision to be a mistake and the opposite decision to be the correct thing to do. So no matter what, you have a situation where someone thinks that there's a mistake. So it's the perfect thing for sidechains. But yeah, I think they always thought of it as, well, it's really kind of bizarre because it's hard. I don't think they really had worked out like what they believed. They were probably debating it a lot. They were probably confused about it themselves. I think there's a lot of people think like it was just a way of testing out upgrades in a sort of zone. And then once they're proven, they would merge them into, you know, Bitcoin Core. So they thought it was like kind of a way of doing staged upgrades. And you can find like, there's like a December 2013, like Bitcoin Wizards IRC chat log or something, where Loop Dash Jr. is sort of talking about this. And this is kind of the origin of this meme of the two-way peg, as it's called, the currency peg. But at the same time, you can also go back and you can find the early Blockstream. You can find the early Blockstream website, and they have like infographics on there, and they have like sidechain, and they have like sidechains for micropayments. So they have like stuff on there like that. Would obviously, you know, they were like shilling micropayment sidechains at some point in their marketing material for like years back in 2014, 2015, 2016. So it's like, was that like something the marketing people just kind of got away with, or was that like something that everyone believed at Blockstream, but they changed their mind, or did they, like, I don't know, who knows? I don't know. Your guess is.
But see, that's the issue there, is that the underlying premise is that there were a group of developers that were making choices for all of us.
Yeah, and so I see the side.
And that's what, as a big blocker, pissed me off, is like,
yeah, exactly. Because it's not, you know, it's not conducive to creativity. It's certainly not to freedom. A lot of people care about freedom in the Bitcoin community. And it's a reasonable thing to want to do, is say like, you know, there's plenty of, you know, like take Linux, there's many different versions of Linux that are each run by different people. People right. have their own little, run it as their own little dictatorship. Some people like that. They like the structure. They like the accountability. They like having the dictator who takes responsibility and owns the project. But if you don't like it, then you can leave and go to some other thing. You know, you have like Ubuntu, you have, you know, like everyone's got like all these flavors. You know, there's like some stuff that come with games. There's stuff that comes with nothing. So the issue though is Bitcoin cannot do that because the network effects of money. It would be fine if it were just doing some boring thing, like if it were like some kind of Dropbox or something like that. But with money, you really need everyone to be using the same unit, you know. So money is very strong. Like even the stigma associated with, remember the early days of Bitcoin? It was like super, super embarrassing to even talk. I didn't tell like any of my friends or family about it at all. I was like ashamed of it all the time because just the stigma of switching from like US dollars to Bitcoin, it makes it seem like you don't have any, you know, if you're shilling the new kind of money, it makes it look like you don't have any US dollars or something. It makes you look like some kind of weirdo, you know? So it was like really awkward. I remember like a long time ago, really long time ago, like before a scaling war or whatever. It just happened to be the case that I think Roger Veer and I were like in Boston, like some other people. Roger insisted on, he's like, we found this restaurant that accepts Bitcoin. So like, we'll go or whatever. And then they're like, you know, we order the food and it's perfectly great. And then Roger tries to pay with Bitcoin, you know, and they're like, they have like no idea what we're talking about or something. It's like so embarrassing. And it's like just ridiculous. It's so funny. But you know, money, people don't like it to be too subversive with money. You know, it's like you're stabbing the whole community in the back, you know, these people, like, imagine that you're like some old 70-year-old guy on Medicare in America or something, and you're getting Social Security or something, and people say, you know, we don't care about US dollars. This is like a weird kind of thing, you know, like they work their whole life to save up, maybe they have like $200,000 in the bank or something. I'm just making that up, but they save that up, and you know, like, would they keep it in cash? No, but the point is they save up, and now you're saying, well, you know, up yours or whatever. I don't care about that. So that's like a really disturbing thing. And that's why you cannot have it just switch easily. You have to have, you want to be able to switch software, but not switch the coin. And that's the challenge of sidechains. That was the whole engineering problem. And that was, and so I see it as subversive because I see it as you can escape Bitcoin Core and make it to your own piece of software that has whatever you think is good on it. You can make your own mistakes there, whatever. Now, obviously, for the developers in who are very, you know, have worked with Bitcoin Core their whole lives or whatever, very influential Bitcoin Core, this idea of escaping is obviously very, you know, a little weird to them. They don't really get that because they're like, oh, isn't it perfect here? You know?
Well, exactly. When you're the Supreme Byzantine General, yeah, you know, you kind of like it that way, right?
Well, you know, a lot of these people do get paid a lot of money, and like, think of the oversight, right? Like, who could even, you know, like, who could even, like, there's no question of, like, these people have, like, no accountability, basically. Like, who would even be in a position to say that they should have done something differently or whatever? Like, basically no one, a lot of these people. So, you know, and like, you can do whatever you want. You get, like, invited to these conferences all around the world. You know, it's like a lot of fun. People are having a lot of fun. People are always interested in your opinion.
Yeah. I mean, what ended up happening is that governance became centralized. You know, and if they want to pretend like that was not the case, they
can
pretend all they want, but we're still going to call them out.
Yeah, I do agree with you about that. But I think the framing, people like to frame it in all these abstract ways, governance, decentralization, blah, blah, blah. I think it's more helpful to just frame it in terms of problems, just problem and solution. There was a problem that the problem that sidechain solve is that the people may not agree on what the protocol should do. And then what do? They're trapped in the one protocol. And if they leave, then they have no network effect. So they're screwed. It's kind of like the people who say, like, you know, if you don't like the United States, leave. And you're like, well, okay, but every corner of the earth is, you know, occupied by some government or another. So, you know, you can't really leave, you know, and you have to leave your friends, your family, your language, your culture. It is very difficult. So it's, you know, it costs you a lot to leave. And so what we want to do is make it really, 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 really cheap to leave. And that's the idea, that you just make a piece of software and the same coins, leave most of your wealth on layer one even, and just use, if you want a new feature, just take only a few coins over there and use the feature, bring them back to layer one when you're done, or whatever, do whatever you like.
Yeah, you call it layer one, but it's really you would call it the main chain, really.
Yeah. The main chain. I now use this whole layers thing, has this meme of the layers has gone so far.
Okay.
That I'm calling the side chain sort of layer twos in my head.
Don't do that. Cause then that's confusing, Paul. People will get more confused. See, side chains are, here's the Bitcoin network, and the Bitcoin network are nothing more than computers connected to one another, the miners.
Sure.
Okay. These same miners, they are mining small block Bitcoin, right? Right here, little small block Bitcoin. And that's what they're doing, BTC. But what if we can also have spout like another side chain that is pegged to small Bitcoin, and we can do different things. Maybe this side chain does complete zero knowledge proof transactions, where all transactions are completely private by default. Right.
Yes, we have. I'm happy you mentioned that, because I'm quite proud of this. We have a working Zcash sidechain already. That I don't know exactly when we finished that, but you can check it out, and it works great. And I designed a cool little user interface that's just two buttons called Meltcast. So if you can use the fully shielded Z transactions if you like. And you want to stay fully private over there. That's like Zcash. That's not Monero. This is a Zcash specific type thing. Different type of a thing though. You can do that. But also if you just want to move the coins like kind of through as a kind of coin anonymizing tool, then you just have to click these two buttons that I designed in Wait, and it will do it for you, which I think is quite clever, because the privacy stuff has to be easy to use. We need to get a lot of people to use it. So that's that everyone's awesome. Stuff mixes together and stuff. So I'm very interested in that, and to the point of where we've already created it. Now, the reason the layer two language, I think it's pretty helpful actually, because when you have the new layer that has the zero knowledge proof privacy network, it starts with zero coins on it. So it's kind of like the Lightning Network when it's first created. It starts with nothing on it. You have to send the coins to it. We have to start on Bitcoin Core main chain layer one. You send seven coins over to it over there. And then they show up over there. But so it is kind of like they're on layer one and they go up. The coins go up to layer two.
But the thing is that those coins are still being transacted amongst the miners.
It happens between the miners.
Right, but it's processed by the miners.
Yes, the side chain is layer two of its parent main chain, but it is a layer one of its own blockchain network. So you could have a large block side chain. The large block side chain could itself have its own Lightning Network. Lightning Network would be a layer two of that chain, but then it would sort of be a layer three of the original main chain. You know, like whatever. It's like it depends on what you, however you like to. It does have the feature that all of the messages are blockchain messages. So they pay a transaction fee on their network. They are included into blocks on their network, et cetera. So it should be very familiar to people who the cool thing is that
when, let's say you create this zero knowledge proof version of BTC as a side chain. If that gains more popularity, people will simply migrate their coin from the BTC blockchain that we're using now to the zero knowledge one. And all of a sudden, this becomes the main chain.
Well, it's
by default, it does, right?
In BIP 300, the drive chain is now like split into two BIPs, BIP 300 and 301. So in the design now, the main chain has an architectural point of view, and they cannot switch places. Every side chain block, every layer two block is also a layer one block, but is not the reverse. You could find a situation where maybe the main chain starts with 21 million coins, hypothetically, and the side chain starts with zero. People could start to, now that we put 100 coins on the side chain, put like 10,000 coins, put 1 million coins on the side chain. The side chain could eventually have like something like 15 million coins. And then a different sidechain could have 13 million coins. And then a third sidechain could have 1 million coins. And then that only leaves 2 million coins that aren't, that are just only on layer one main chain. But that thing would still be the main chain. Even though it would be like the, you know, as far as popularity with actual users who are transacting, it would be, you know, less used day to day. But it cannot survive with it. It's kind of like the layer one would be kind of like a power plant, and layer two, these side chains would be kind of like, be like your cell phone maybe or something, or your desktop. Okay. You cannot, even though you're just, you care a lot more about your desktop because you use it every day and it does lots of cool things. But if you lose power, it will just not, it will be wrecked. So
okay,
it is subordinate. The side chains are all subordinate to the main chain, just as a matter of how it is designed.
Have you read Gavin Andreessen's latest blog post?
Well, which one is his latest one? Because did he have one like a couple months ago that I saw? Yeah,
the one where he says that like the BTC blockchain, logically speaking, will cease to exist.
I did read that, and I tweeted something about it that I thought was kind of insightful, because I don't remember exactly what it was, unfortunately, but I don't think his math sort of completely added up. Or he had like one thing that he wanted to have both ways, but I don't remember what I wrote, but that was like a year ago, wasn't it?
It was like probably like a couple months ago, actually.
Yeah. And I said something like, he wants it like both ways. I don't remember what I said, so I don't want to just say it, but
we may be talking about different things. Given the timeline you think.
No, I think, well, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I can look it up for you if you want. I can try to look it up.
Go for it, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try to look it up. Let me see if I can find it. Check this out there.
Because, you know, Paul, honestly, like, I, as a big blocker and as someone that wants the best for everyone, dude, I really think that what you've done with drive chains, with actually giving us side chains for BTC, that is like the saving grace for BTC. Like, I honestly can't see myself being pro BTC as it is right now. But the idea of drive chains, of side chains, you know, provides like a hope in that BTC has a future, that it is self-sustaining over time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's, I don't know like what the plan is if it's not like this, you know, like,
what would it be?
People don't, the one thing is the security budget thing. Like, the plan is for the total amount of fees paid on the Bitcoin network to rise a lot, like a lot.
Yeah. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Like 1,000x, but they really can't.
Or to increase the emission of the 21 million. To subsidize miners over time, like,
yeah, well, some people, yeah, they, some people are really into that as a solution, which a lot of, you know, people hate, rightly so. So I wrote all about that in a cool blog post about like security budget part two or whatever. Now let me see if I can find this thing here. I'm not going to distract with my Twitter. I don't know. Let me see if I can find it. Let's see. I'm gonna look for it now. I haven't found it yet.
Because, you know, as much as
okay, people, yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, what's the title again? A plausible future for BTC, something like that.
Yeah, a possible BTC future. Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna just read. I don't remember. It was September 21st, 2021. So you're right, it wasn't that long ago at all. It's just COVID has ruined my perception of time, and no longer everything seems like it was both forever ago and yesterday. So
right.
About that, he says, and I quote him, miners are being rewarded 4,000 or so transactions a block, $7,500 per transaction. These transactions are high value. So that was the fee. He's saying it's $7,000, 500 fee. These transactions are high value, mostly between super whale size holders. And he says centralized exchanges, central banks, and the decentralized multi-party computation addresses that hold all the wrapped coins, because he's big into wrapped coins now, which is a big story for this year, that the number of wrapped BTC is like vastly more. I don't know what it is. Maybe I should look it up before I say, but it's like much more than all the coins on Lightning Network, Liquid, or whatever. Like, do you know the number? I think it's like a million coins.
Yeah, it's something up there. Yeah, it's really intense.
Look it up. That's over there. We don't know. But anyway, let me just stay on topic here. So what I say is, he's saying there's 4,000 transactions per block. And I'm saying that's 576,000 transactions per day. Because this is his number. So I just multiply it out. This is not controversial at all. It's a fixed number of blocks per day. So I'm saying 576,000 blocks per day. And I say, how many super whales are there supposed to be? And why are they transacting with each other so much? You know? And I'm saying, I would think a super whale could go 2 weeks or more without needing to settle on layer one. So if each super whale goes once per 14 days, and there's 576,000, as Gavin says, then there must be 8,064,000 super whales. So this is the quantity in the world. And then this is where it gets over. Okay, right. So I'm almost done. I'm saying if this is the case where there's all these whales, these super whales at his rate of 4,000 per block, and they only transact once every 2 weeks. And since they're super rich, I think that's kind of like, you know, the number. Then there are some weird conclusions from this. Like, each super whale can't possibly own more than 2 BTC, as if they did, they would own more than 16 million coins amongst themselves. And then in Gavin's example, 2 Bitcoin is just $12 million in his example, because he gave the numbers in his in his post. And then finally, my last and final point is, I just say there's only 2,755 billionaires in our world today. So I kind of think like his scenario, like something has to shift in scenario. I just take his scenario seriously, and I think it kind of leads to contradiction there. So that's what I thought of it. I thought it was a really interesting idea. Do you know the wrapped number? Did you look it up? Let's look it up.
No, I was looking at your, I was reading along with you.
Okay, cool. Wrapped. Let's look it up, because it's important to know. It's important to know the real numbers, you know. Like, you know, they have Jamie do it on the Joe Rogan. They're like, you know, it's like, look it up. Why not? Why just say the wrong thing, you know?
Paul's a trained statistician, guys. Paul is all about statistics. If you don't know about Paul's curriculum vitae, you should learn about it. He worked with a notable economist at Yale University back in the day. So he's all about the numbers.
Okay, let's see here. Okay, there's an article from June 8th that says 1.3% of Bitcoin supply has now been wrapped onto Ethereum. So that was as of June 8th, according to this person who, you know, they may be totally wrong, but that sounds right to me. It seems like we're up to, so it's not quite a million, but it's a third of a million. So it's 321,000, it seems to be. And so, I mean, you know, by comparison, like there's like 3,000 in the whole Lightning Network, and like the whole Liquid Network is like another 3,000 or something. So that's like, you know, 100 times less. You know, and think of just how much attention that, like, you know, the Lightning Network will get and all that versus right on. Wrapped BTC. Shouldn't wrapped BTC get like roughly 100 times more attention if it's roughly 100 times larger? So
yeah, definitely.
Not necessarily, but something like that. You know, that's just an interesting thing that people should know about, that there's enormous mismatch there.
All right, Paul. So here comes a question. You ready for the heavy question here? We led up to this. It's like the big question.
I was born ready.
All right.
Maybe. I don't know.
All right. Given the history of BTC and the importance of drive chains for the future of BTC, as you and I both agree that drive chains, that's the way for BTC to succeed. There is no other way. In my opinion, I don't see another way, because you have to engage the miner people. The miners have to engage. The miners have to monetize. And there has to be a sensible solution to the fact that Bitcoin's emission schedule will keep halving every 4 years, and you're going to need to subsidize the miners. So you either increase the transaction fees, or you extend the amount of Bitcoin that will ever be in existence beyond the 21. You change the fixed supply of Bitcoin. Drive chains allows you to experiment with transactions processed by miners so that miners could have a way to monetize in the future within BTC. This is a question. Will they allow you to implement drive chains on BTC?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question because they...
We have to know the answer.
I get questions like that a lot. You know,
because these...
But, you know, for a really long time, you know, it's still not perfectly finished, but, we were still not working on it. We were still working on it for a while. So only recently, like this year, has it approached something like a state where it's kind of being finished. Most of the work, I have to stress, is not on the actual BIP300 part, which is very, very small. The BIP300 part is really just a little counter that counts up to 26,000. And then this thing where the Bitcoin transaction either goes through if that number is high enough, or it cannot go through if the number is not high enough. And that's very simple, but it's the sidechain template part. I push all the work into the sidechain. So all the code, all the work the software is like like the ship, like the BIP300 is kind of like a harbor and the sidechains are like ships. So we built like a blank ship template. Most of the work was actually on that. And once that is done, anyone can add BIP300 to any project, you know, Bitcoin, Monero, whatever. And then they can just copy the ships completely. They can copy the dock and they can copy all the ships. And
that's awesome.
The metaphor makes any sense. But
wait a minute. We can have sidechains on Monero as well?
Well, I'm just saying anyone who redoes what I did with BIP300 is the very small part.
Yeah.
Which I say is very simple. Which is in our testnet software that anyone can run right now. If you had let's say Bitcoin implements this BIP300 thing and Monero also does this. And then let's say Bitcoin has like five sidechains, like it has like a Zcash sidechain, it has like a scaling sidechain or whatever, it has like a bit assets sidechain. It has sidechain that's like basically a joke, like Dogecoin sidechain or whatever, something funny like that, or whatever you want. And it has like five. The Monero people can copy that project like exactly. The sidechains are very much like plugins. And so someone makes the whatever you want to call it, bit asset sidechain. You can just copy that, you know, and more or less exactly. And then the Monero people can just send their coins to that, the same software. It'll be different coins because there'll be like, BTC bit asset sidechain, and there'll be Monero bit asset side. But the point is, it's the same software. The software would be exactly the same. It's kind of like how you can have like an ad block for Mozilla Firefox and ad block for Chrome or something.
Right on.
So it's the same. The sidechains would be like ad block.
So what's the
problem? Most of the work is on ad block. You know what I mean? Like most of the work is like, what does ad block do? Is ad block working correctly? And then you develop it for like whatever, Chrome. And then, but then the cool thing is BIP300 is like the plugin installer thing. So it would be, once you put BIP300 on Monero or whatever, it can just use all the whole library of sidechains, the whole library plugins. So
what is the process to have drive chains adopted onto BTC?
Well, I mean, I feel like I don't even know at this point. Maybe if someone figures it out, they can tell me. I don't know, like these people are like, there's like a long process. You talk on the mailing list, then people tell you that you haven't talked on the mailing list, even though you have. And then you go on Twitter and then people write a bunch of things that are not true. And then you put out a blog post that no one reads. So you turn it into a presentation and then people watch the presentation and then they write things that you wrote about in the presentation and you anticipated in the presentation. You say, well, people might think this, but that's not true. And then people will just watch the first 30 seconds and then they'll say that thing that you totally anticipated. And then the conversation will like go nowhere for a while. So I don't know what the process is anymore. There's even like fatigue
SegWit was sort of decided upon in December 2015, and then the code was finished in October 2016, basically a year later. And then it took a while to activate because of that giant blockade slash war that happened. And so that happened. And then that was, August 2017 that SegWit activated. And then this whole Taproot thing like didn't activate until November of last, 2 months ago or whatever.
Right.
So that would have been December 2021. So that was like 4.5 years. And now Jeremy Rubin has a very, very simple BIP that anyone with two neurons could read, and in like 30 minutes, they could figure out that it won't harm anyone who does not use the opcode, his opcode. You know Jeremy Rubin's thing, check template verify, or it would used to be called op secure the bag. He has like a very simple thing, but now everyone is attacking him and saying, oh, he's trying to rush this through or whatever. Even though I'm not sure about this, someone can like check this. I didn't know if I understood this or not, but according to what I was seeing, it's like his code is like 4 years old or something. Is that true? Someone, maybe I misunderstood that. Jeremy Rubin.
I don't know. We'll have to have him on the show.
It's like super, super old, but he's accused of rushing. So I don't know. Like, I think it's the whole thing is like it's like an upside down world. Those people have all like blue pilled themselves. They've like, they exited the matrix, and now they've installed themselves into like a new matrix where they just talk all the time and nothing they say is true or makes any sense. And they're just like, I don't know.
But see, Paul, that's the thing is that like...
Yeah, it's become very defective. And that's
your worldview of Bitcoin is still very different from mine. Thing,
people would be able to escape. I know. Feedback loop. There'd be a feedback loop. Because what would happen would be there'd be a disagreement. Jeremy Rubin would just launch. There'd be like, what would really happen is there would be like base chain, main chain, layer one Bitcoin. And then there'd probably be like two, there'd be a bunch of side chains, but then there'd be like two versions of like competing to be like latest Bitcoin core. And one would probably be like liberal and one would probably be like conservative. The conservative people would, probably the conservative one would be like more prestigious or whatever. So Jeremy Rubin would pitch it to them for a little while. And then he'd get sick of their bullshit, or whatever it is. And then he'd just be like, fine. And meanwhile, the liberal side would like be watching. So they might even merge it in, like even against his will or whatever. Or he would go switch to them and he would say, well, why don't you guys merge it in? You're the liberal fork of Bitcoin or whatever. You'd merge anything. Merge in my weird opcode. And they'd merge it. And then if Jeremy Rubin is right about it being useful to the end user, which is an important thing.
Yeah.
No one cares about the customer, you know? You got to care about the customer is always right. You know, you have to care about the customer. You got to care about the user.
Like you would think, right? I mean, you would think, right? I mean,
you would think. Well, that's the moral thing. That's the moral thing is to the consumer is the king.
I mean, when I was part of these debates with, BTC Core, we were told to go ahead, just don't use Bitcoin, use credit cards. That's what we were told.
Right. So you should, you have to stick to what's possible, but the customer should be the king. It should be, especially if it's truly bizarre situation when the customer really, really wants to do something. And they also like write all the code and do all the testing and they do all the work. And they make some argument to you as to why this will not affect any of the other users of the network. Right. So that's like really going above and beyond. That's like the customer is like going to Detroit and like building their own car that they want.
Right.
And then someone saying like, you can't drive this car off the factory or something. All right. You're like, well, that seems kind of like, this is kind of weird. But what was I saying? He would go to the liberal one and they'd merge it in. And then if it's useful to the user, there would just be like, more users over there. There'd be more coins. And you know how these software people are, they want to have impact. They want to have the software, you know, they want to work on software that people use. And then there would be a bigger ecosystem. There would be, if one side continued to make mistakes and to shed users, such as coins were leaving and more, you know, fewer merchants were accepting it, or fewer people had even heard of it. Because, you know, prestige is really important for these things.
Right.
These like software tech things. You got to have you got to work on a project that makes a big splash, you know, just like people, no one wants to learn a programming language that's sort of dead, right? That's no good for your career. So if one project was just shedding users and they were just not, you know, they were not keeping the customers, they would eventually become, let's call it inspired. Their search for new ideas would become frantic. They would start to, and if they had a crazy dictator who ran into the ground, then they would eventually just rule over an empty, you know, project, and other people would move on. And that person would later be, you know, that when they write the history books, they would be like, that was the guy who killed the project or whatever. So
right on. So
that would be a very different story.
Let's step back a little bit, because I want people to really get to know you. And what your baby really is is Bitcoin Hivemind, which is a decentralized predictions market, which was copied, pasted in Ethereum into what has been known as Augur. And as you know, but that's another story. Augur.
It is a long story in itself.
Yeah,
that would be nice if they did. There's a lot of truth and falsehood in that. You know, like I think they kind of ruined it in a couple of ways. They made some changes that I think were terrible. It was basically my idea, and they started changing it from there.
Right on.
It's a long story.
Your goal is to put your real goal is the decentralized prediction market on Bitcoin, right? That's really what you've always wanted.
Correct? Well, I would just like one to exist in general. Unfortunately, they don't exist. And in fact, I don't know if there was there's been over the years, I'm going off on a tangent again, but this is really important. I'm very passionate about this idea. So let me just say I think that the US, our policy towards these prediction markets or event derivatives, as they're sometimes called, the CFTC has the Commodity Futures Trading Commission has sort of banned many of these. And it's not really the CFTC's fault. You know, it's like there's this whole cultural, legal inertia or whatever. Someone told them to ban them, and they are just the regulators that can ban them. So they banned them. For example, election betting is there have been statements made by the CFTC that it's like not in the public interest or whatever. And I disagree with that. I think that it's one of the most important things ever. And I think that this policy is so bad for the country that I would say, I would trade, if someone could give me like totally deregulated event derivatives world, I would say that's almost worth the United States losing World War II. And that would kind of make it, US would be sort of better off net if we could make that. So that's like roughly how important I think it is.
Wow.
I think it's so important we would have made up for losing World War II and then some by now, if we had just never, and there would be no such thing as, all, you know, there would never be, there wouldn't be a World War III. It would be impossible to commit the resources. But
I think this is
really, really, really important. So I just wish we had the event derivatives. When Bitcoin came out, I was like, oh, this is like a very cool thing. It's a software program you can't turn off. Bitcoin itself was part of the solution because you could move money around and no one could stop you. So that was an interesting, that was like, I was kind of like, oh, is this it? But then it became clear that it was not it, because this so-called Oracle problem is that when two people more or less, they want to enter into some kind of financial contract, or they do like a bet. Like I think that someone will win the Super Bowl and you think someone will lose the Super Bowl. our money kind of goes to like a third party, and that person can just take all the money, which, and this happened, there was stuff like BitBet back in the day, which, you know, it's a long story, but it, you know, this Oracle thing was tough. Like, what, how do you, oh, and people came up with various little tiny things that were tiny, tiny band-aids on the problem, and they don't really work. Like this whole discrete log contracts today is, that's a tiny, tiny band-aid. It doesn't work at all. It's like you and I will put the funds in something and there'll be like a third party arbitrator and it'll have like different keys and maybe you and I can agree that you lost. It's really a big mess because what the arbitrator can do is they can always show up to the market themselves after, let's say whoever it is, like, I don't know, let's say Tampa Bay, we're betting on Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning the Super Bowl and they lose. Before the thing settles, you need to wait for the event, you know, in order to settle it, like you don't know who won. The reality hasn't decided yet. But after they lose, you could show up and start to bet that they'll win for like roughly $0. You can enter the bet and take all these bets. And then since you're the one that decides, you just say, well, you just lie, and then you can collect all the money. So the Oracle can withdraw all the money always. So it's like running an exchange. It's like running Mt. Gox or something. Whoever's running all these contracts, whoever the Oracle is, so to speak, they have all the money. So I kind of realized, this is a long time ago, 2012 maybe, I was like, oh, maybe Bitcoin will enable these things. But then I was like, oh, it won't actually, because the Oracle problem. So what we need is some kind of tamper-resistant peer-to-peer Oracle thing. And so, yeah, I designed that. That was Truthcoin. That was like 2013, 2014.
Would so they have
I'm
to
really
operate
about that?
Right. You're that would have to operate on chain, right? That would have to, for Bitcoin hive mind to work, it would have to operate on chain, right? Or would
it needs to have its own blockchain because it does lots of things that are all related to each other and has this state. It keeps track of whose markets are where. It has this ownership thing, so to prevent exit scamming and for several other reasons. But I invented the idea of the tradable reputation type concept that, you know, that's one of the things that was copied and pasted into Augur, like without, more or less without being changed. But the idea is that you cannot, if you're familiar with darknet markets, you know that often what they do is they open, and then they run at a loss for a while as they build up reputation and abstract, you know, and they build up a brand. Then they start to get big, they have geometric user growth, and then they're profitable for a little while. And then they have so much money deposited that they often do what they call the exit scam, where they just say, okay, it's been fun, but we're taking everyone's money now because there's so much money. There's like, whatever, like 100,000 coins. And people just say, we're just going to take all the money, and they just close the site. And then, but they steal the money at the end. Because see, imagine this, you're going to close the site. What's the most profitable move at the very end? To just close the site and give everyone their money back? Well, if you're going to close the site and it's all illegal anyway, there's no honor amongst thieves, as they say. So you just take all the coins with your last move. And that's the exit scam. And so to get around that issue and other things, I had the way of resolving the outcomes involve you having to invest money in the secondary coin thing that was like an equity thing. So I invented like all this stuff long before it even had terminology, like staked coins and all this stuff like that. I came up with all that like a long time ago, like 2013. And in particular, these would gain value as the whole system had more and more credibility. So instead of exiting and just scamming and taking everyone's money, you would just sell. And it'd be like you bought Tesla when no one believed in it, and then you sell after more people believe in it. And you just extract an enormous amount of money that way, and good for you because
nice.
That's what you deserve as helping. And similarly, if you're an owner and the whole thing is performing terribly and fucking up, and the users hate it and everything, and people are lying about everything, its value would plummet, and now you would lose money. So these are just like when I invented all this stuff. I don't know if you're interested in those details, but yeah, I'm really interested in prediction markets. You had to, in order to get them to work, you I came up with all this stuff, and it's just no practice. The best way to do it in practice is to have the blockchain do all of it. So, and to have it be a single purpose, to just be doing all of this stuff, tracking the markets, the trades, and resolving the Oracle things. And so, yeah, so that's why I thought, oh, I'll just wait for Blockstream to do all the sidechain stuff. Because I was coming up with it like when they were coming up with their stuff.
Right.
So the timing was very, like, it was like, you know, it was all happening at the same time. In retrospect, that was probably a bad thing, because if I had only come up with it earlier or later, I probably would have just done like something like Monero, where I would have been like, well, I have no choice but to just, or maybe like David Work's SIA project or something. It would have been like, well, I don't know what else to do, so I'll just launch this as an altcoin. I probably should have learned more from like Namecoin, where it's just like, just launch the coin and just like kind of figure it out later. But instead, I never launched any altcoin or whatever with it.
Do you need privacy for the predictions market? Is that a precursor?
Or
is it best to be open?
The thing is, right now, there's in ideally, yes. There's already a pretty good deal of privacy in Bitcoin, though. It's all based on your UTXO. So if you know how, if you can use Meltcast, like in the Zcash sidechain, like I described before, you take some coins, you put them in there, and you do Meltcast, you'll get out private UTXOs. And if you deposit those into Hivemind and then use them to make trades, people won't know who's making the trades. That is a big deal, because part of the, you want people to be able to, the trades are supposed to be like people's unvarnished thoughts, you know, they're like, you don't want any stigma. So let's say someone, you know, let's say someone prefers, they would rather that maybe the Democratic candidate win. Maybe they're Democrat personally, philosophically. But maybe they just know the Republican candidate is the Democratic candidate sucks and they're tanking everything. Or maybe like reverse it, like Sarah Palin or something. A lot of Republicans, like with their heart, they really wanted the McCain-Palin ticket to work, but their brains, they were like, this Palin person is tanking the ticket or whatever, we're never going to win. You don't want there to be any kind of stigma for making the trade. So there can't be any retribution for making the trade. So another example would be like, what if you knew something? Like, so the example there would be like, you bet that the Republican person will lose, but then you don't want your Republican friends to find out about it, to be like, oh, look at this. This guy, he bet on that or whatever, you know, he's not a real Republican or blah, blah, blah. Similarly, though, you could just, you know, here's a really good example. Let's say we have one of my favorite markets is not even political at all. It's just, should we replace the CEO? Because at a large corporation, the politics becomes very similar to nation state. Also, it's not quite the same, because at least at a corporation, it can start to lose money and people will care, and eventually it'll go bankrupt and be like liquidated and bought by someone else. So there's the feedback rides to the rescue much more quickly there. But still, when the corporation is very large, it's sort of insulated from competition to some extent. And so there's still horrible politics there. So one of my favorite prediction market ideas, it's a Robin Hanson idea, like most of the best ideas out there. Should you just have one market running all the time? That is, what's the stock price if we fire the CEO or keep him? And then you just compare these numbers, just this graph over time. And then when the market says that you should fire the CEO, you just fire him. Now, let's say you're second in line to be CEO, or you're one of the candidates. If you try to argue that the CEO should be fired, but fail, then the CEO will exact retribution on you and you'll be out, you know? So you can't do this. You have to do some kind of clever corporate politic bullshit thing that can take like years or whatever, or maybe never happen. And meanwhile, the CEO surround himself with, you know, like loyal, whatever, idiot people. And it's just a horrible place to work for everyone, because it'll be super annoying. No one will actually be working, focused on the customer. There'll be all kinds of bullshit happening, like endless tests of loyalty, and it'll suck for everyone. It'll be horrible, as I'm sure it is in many, many places today.
You want people to be able to take sides on whether or not the CEO is doing a good job without any fear of them being getting any kind of punishment or reward other than if they are ultimately right. So if they want to say, if we fire the CEO, the stock price will go up, they should only lose money if they're wrong about that. And in every other scenario, they should gain money, and they shouldn't gain any other thing. No one should, they should be able to show up to work and say, I believe in the CEO 100%. And then they should be able to go home and bet. So anonymity, it's a very long-winded way of answering the question, but the anonymity is very important. But already we have enormously more. We would have enormously more anonymity just if there was any Bitcoin, anything, because, but right now we have like nothing. We have no Bitcoin things. We have no, the only prediction markets we can have are ones where like a company voluntarily sets it up internally. And those you would have no privacy at all because they only let employees participate and then they know who it is. And so the most, so that's good for a couple of things like learning deadlines for projects, but it's good for the really subversive thing, which is, you know, should we even be doing this project at all? Or is the CEO an idiot actually?
Right.
And a lot of people don't want some of the knowledge to get out. It's too valuable because the prediction market won't lie. So it's like you have like some kind of brilliant autistic person that you invite in, you know?
Right. They just tell you how it is.
There's a lot of people don't want that. The other person will show up and they'll just be like, oh, he said the quiet part out loud or whatever, you know? Like,
Yeah.
So this is crazy, but that's the world I want to live in. The world where the market is mercilessly stabbing people as soon as they underperform. I want to live in a world where when you show up to work, you have a really big challenge ahead of you and you got to work every day refining your art and getting better and better all the time. And if you don't, then you are, you know, like you're not on the street, but I want everyone to be like working super hard. And then the flip side of that coin is I want everyone to be earning an enormous amount of money. I want everyone to be like exactly where they should be, you know. Everyone should be earning a ton of money. And then when people are consumers, when they go to spend their money in the economy, I want everyone to be treated like, you know, a king, you know, and even the lowliest janitor or whatever should be like every single person in the world should be working as hard as they can, thinking all their, there should be a total freedom to try all their creative thoughts. And I want like the CEO to be kind of on the chopping block the same way like an Uber driver would be, right? Where it's like, they have to hit the numbers every day. And if you don't want to do that, just take a different job, you know? Like you can, I'm not saying people can't, you can always get a job as a guitarist or whatever. I would think in my world, there would be so much wealth that we can support all kinds of other jobs, hobbies and things. But I just think that it's not, there are plenty of people skate by and there's no accountability, and that's terrible for everyone. It's terrible for the consumer. It's terrible for the investors. It's terrible for the other employees who have to put up with it. So yeah, we want there to be accountability, and especially in the, you know, like what about in U.S. Congress where these people are getting the reelection rate is like 95%, and everyone hates every congressperson, you know, right. And the congresspeople are obviously like basically retarded. I mean, like when they interview like a psychologically normal person. Oh, God forbid, like when they interview like, you know, like when they like subpoena like Jeff Bezos or whatever. And then it's just like, you're just like watching them, the people talk to them. And you're like, okay, you know, like, however you feel about Jeff Bezos, you're like these people, these Congress people who are talking to him, like, you know, they sound really stupid. So, you know, it's like, is it on purpose or whatever? But, you know, they don't have their average citizen's best interests at heart, you know, and it's because people don't know how to vote to get rid of them. But with the prediction markets, they would know very easily.
Right on.
How to vote to get rid of them. So.
So if BTC does not open the door to drive chains, side chains, then you're not going to have a home for the prediction market on BTC. What will you do then?
That would suck.
Yeah, I know. Dude, I'm a big fan of you. I'm asking you, you know, I'm not trying to control you at all, man. I'm being very honest. because I'm here, and you may know where I'm going with this question. There are right now in the market experiments with the Bitcoin protocol, and the example that comes to mind first and foremost is BSV. We were talking about Daniel Kravitz just a second ago, and BSV is all about, you know, having, you know, embracing Bitcoin's computational power and having as big block size as we can calibrate, yes, as we may need in the system. Would you be down for using BSV at least to try it out there?
Just I don't think so, but I think that's not the we have already produced the code, the software that has a GUI like for Bitcoin Hive Mind and for DriveChain. So that code is out there for really anyone to use. I think Bitcoin SV is like, you know, hopelessly mired by the baggage from Bitcoin Cash in itself is already like hopelessly worn down by its own like hard fork complications.
You really emphasize marketing, don't you? You really emphasize marketing. Every time we talk about these things,
it's like, no, it's not quite that, but I do emphasize network effects. The network effects are big.
I agree. But what about utility though? If you are able to use and build something like Bitcoin Hive Mine on the big block version of Bitcoin, why not give it a go?
I can already do it on, like I said, I think I prefer it to be its own. I think I prefer it to just be an altcoin. And I think I might have, as I said, I might have even done that if the timing were slightly different, because, you know, like Monero did that and other projects like Namecoin did that. So I think that would be the other thing though, is there's a complicated thing like how the oracles work that you don't want them to be like interfered with from far away. So it's kind of the project is going to require some kind of sidechain like thing, in my opinion. And so I don't know exactly how it will all play out with respect to who will adopt with like BIP300 or my prediction market ideas, but they are out there for anyone to copy. Right now, I'm still focused on like finishing them. And then I think, I'm not sure exactly what, you know, I will do, because it is going to be like the process in Bitcoin, apparently, you know, when you see, I was just talking about the timeline earlier, like how long it's been from SegWit to Taproot, and then like to like next thing or whatever that is going to be. We'll have to see a little bit more about like how Jeremy Rubin fares with his call BIP 119 to see like exactly, you know, what the time frame is even like. But yeah, if anyone wants to take the ideas that I have and use them, I think that is great. It's probably better if you try and take them, copy them with high fidelity. Like, everyone will have to modify them, but you should just kind of, rather if you just copy the whole idea, I think that's probably better for everyone. But for Bitcoin SV, I think it's like, it's hopelessly, I think it's sort of in a hopeless death spiral, personally.
I completely disagree with you.
Really? You don't think so at all?
Oh my gosh, man. Have you seen the level of entrepreneurship that's happening there?
No, but I haven't.
Well, you need to keep an eye on it. Like, it's the vision of Bitcoin that I fell in love with, which was you open up a wallet and it's like every Bitcoin wallet is a browser into this new internet that we call Bitcoin, and you have access to all of your apps right there, right then and there. It's gorgeous. Yeah, it's a gorgeous design.
Like some Bitcoin SV meetups long time ago, like 2019 or whatever, and I don't know, people there like asked some questions, people there didn't really seem like they knew what they knew up from down, but in particular on Bitcoin SV, people seem to have to equivocate on whether or not the miners are responsible for serving all of this data on command to like whoever asked for it. And if they do have to do that on the yes side, if they do have to do that, then that's an enormous amount of work and that's going to cost a fortune. And it will grow in like a kind of unbounded way, not an unbounded way, but it'll grow a lot and they'll, you know, that could be a problem. And then on the no side, then if they're not responsible for it, then that's great for them. But then it's not different from what all of Bitcoin SV is not different from like open timestamps on BTC, where there's just optional data that is somehow hash committed, but is not ever served, is not in a required state of being.
No, the data is on chain.
Yeah, no, but you know, if the, okay. Well, this is what I mean, is that this is what I mean by equivocate, is people, they will switch back and forth between yes and no without realizing it.
I didn't hear a question.
Well, the question is, which is it though? Is it, are the miners required to serve all this data on command, like, you know, like a kind of server?
Well, the answer to that is yes. And it's market driven. Yes, it's market driven. Sure, but it's,
it is like, then to be a miner, it will cost a lot of money. Just to be anyone with running a full node will cost more and more money over time and correct. Will potentially be a fortune.
Exactly, yes.
And it also will potentially continue to grow, like in,
yeah,
be put into a state where it will grow a lot.
Yeah, mining is going to be a huge business.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, well, huge.
There's no guarantee though that it'd be profitable. You understand? Like, if they have to serve data, they have to serve it. If it's required, then they have to serve it whether or not they get anything for it.
Yeah, it's going to be an industry that, at my perspective, what I think of it very similar to like the airline industry or any big enterprise where margins are small.
It will be huge. Profitable. Why? You know, they won't get any revenue at all. That's what I was saying. Is they. They have to get, it's either required that they do this or it's not required.
Well, it's required insofar as they get paid for it, right? And it, as insofar as, you know, we're talking about Bitcoin here, right? And Bitcoin is a transparent ledger. And even BTC miners are subject to the laws of their jurisdiction. So yeah, as long as things are quote unquote legal, they should be transacted. And if they're being paid for it,
you've fallen into exactly what I said, which is that if
I don't understand your question,
apparently not. I mean, no. We already have, Bitcoin already has a thing where imagine that there's a giant hard drive, whatever, it's got like a billion terabytes, or I'm just making this up, but there's a giant hard drive. And you put stuff on it, but you can't get anything off of it again. Well, then it's useless, right?
But of course you can get things off of it.
Well, if it were a hard drive, then yes. But this is like a weird Greek example where a guy's pushing a boulder up and it's like, why is he doing that? But it's like, that's not the point. So I'm just saying, if you couldn't get anything off of it, it would be useless. Sure. Right? So that's straightforward.
Yeah.
If they don't get anything for it, if the hard drive is like, let's say I have just some stuff stored on my computer on BTC right now, Bitcoin Core, I could timestamp that and there would be a record of it in Bitcoin, in quotes, because only the record, the timestamp would be there, but the timestamp would have a very small effect. You can, you know, aggregate all the timestamps together such that you use, you know, very little, 32 bytes or even zero, potentially, right, marginal bytes in layer one Bitcoin Core BTC chain. Okay. You can already do that now with an unlimited amount of data, like 100 terabytes, or there's no limit because the timestamps themselves are not actually in layer one blockchain. They just have some effect that is driven by the something that is included in a block that you can later prove.
Yeah.
So you can already do that in BTC. if the answer to the question is that I serve the data and I sell it to you, you ask, you say, I want data point number 43, and I'll give you $20 for it. You can already do that in BTC with open timestamps. So that was the right side of the equivocation. Now, the alternative is that you say this is all part of consensus and people must serve this for free. And it is therefore with a greater availability because it cannot be deleted by anyone.
Wait, for free? No, because not for free. Every movement of any data packet is a tiny microtransaction on Bitcoin's original.
I know, but design. If it's not stored for free in the blockchain.
No. That part of storing data.
You can already do all that exact set of things in BTC today.
Right. So the storing of data is seen by the big blocker as a huge industry there will be a division of labor within the mining process itself, right? There will be the storing of data. There will be the hashing.
Yes, sure.
So every process of mining itself will be compartmentalized per se. There will be a division of labor. So yeah, it's going to be a huge industry, and exactly how that's going to unfold over time, I don't have the answer for you, but I'm pretty sure the market and businesses will decide. We'll figure it out, you know.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, but that's just another way of saying, you know, if you can't say the market will decide, but you know, that's the market will decide, right? I mean, what if you say something like the laws of physics will decide? You know, well, they are going to do that no matter what. So it's not much of an explanation, but. But sure, people can say that. It's not like I disagree. The market will decide.
We know that markets tend to specialize, and there's a division of labor that naturally develops.
Yeah, already there's been
so
enormous mining.
I can expect for there to be
all mining, including BTC mining. There has already been enormous specialization.
Right.
Adam Smith said that specialization was the source of all of our wealth. You know, because among other things, it was easier for the workers to acquire knowledge of production because they did the same thing over and over again. So they got more practice at it and they knew what the problems were. So I agree with all that.
So then to answer my question, people watching this are welcome to take Bitcoin Hive Mine.
Oh, absolutely. Please do.
Play with it. Test drive it.
We have a GUI, we have graphs, we have great stuff on there. We wrote all this software a long time ago. It's very cool. Go to bitcoinhivemind.com, you can check it out. It's great.
Super cool.
I got cool videos on there. I got everything on there. It's great.
So what can we do to help you in your endeavor of making sure that drive chains take off on BTC?
Well, you know, I don't know what can be done about that, but I think one thing that would help if people would just I think it maybe just needs a little more exposure. So people just talk about it a little more. People don't seem to understand it at all though. So I would say if you could try to read the peer review section, there's a site on drivechain.info where I like react to the critiques.
Click on the QR code right now and it'll take you straight to where he's telling you to look
at. Okay, yeah, that'd be great. And then you will know, if you read the peer review page, which is, I think it's sort of easy to read, maybe a little long, there's a lot of text there. But if you know that, then you will understand DriveChain much better than, like, for example, I think most senior BTC technical people, core developers, et cetera, understand it, because some of them, they will say the stuff on their page, they'll say the first half and they'll have their thing. And then I have my reply and the replies were comprehensive. I have a very short article that's called Why Drive Chain is Hard to Understand that I linked to at the very bottom of the peer review page. That's pretty short and it's broken down into 6 reasons. I think that's another thing that if someone is very new, you could start with that and then, but I just like talk about it and see, and don't be, people will just show up and they'll just say like, whatever, this is an attack on Bitcoin or something. You just have to understand is they say that about literally everything. So you have to it's not at all. It's 100% ignorable opt-in soft fork. It does not affect mining incentives in any fundamental way at all. Yes, it's true that miners do slightly different things, but that's literally true of everything that has ever happened in mining. So
yeah, as a big blocker,
fundamental difference. There's no increase in node costs as a result of the soft fork activating. Unlike, for example, SegWit, which is the block size increase, there is, if people are free to sell their Bitcoin and buy an altcoin or sell their Bitcoin for US dollars or to spend their Bitcoin on like a car or something, they should be allowed to spend their BTC to a weird script, which is all that DriveChain is. That's all it is. What that weird script is doing is just an integer that is counting up to 26,000 on one hand, and then either letting a different transaction into the blockchain or preventing it from the blockchain. That is all that it is actually doing. There is like really no way for that to be a bad thing. There is, in particular, another thing that may interest you is that Satoshi Nakamoto himself invented merge mining, and he expressed on Bitcoin Talk very, very clearly and unambiguously that he expected there to be a future with many different merge mined blockchains that had different block sizes and different fee rates. And he expressed total indifference to, you know, this process and predicted it a long time ago. So it is clearly, I think I see this whole sidechain thing as very clearly part of Satoshi's vision. In my merge mining post, I linked all that. I have like screenshots.
Right on.
Sources and things. So those things are all great. Just don't be distracted by people say just these weird things. And it's just because Bitcoin, you gain a lot of points by just pretending to be really concerned about Bitcoin development, even if you don't actually know anything about what you're talking about at all. So,
yeah. It's weird. It's weird to hear you say that people would think that this is an attack on BTC. I would think that not doing this would be an attack on BTC because you would limit options.
Going without it is much riskier.
Yeah, it's scary.
I mean, here's the thing is, what if, look at one thing you can look at is Ethereum transaction fees, the total US dollar amount of Ethereum transaction fees versus BTC transaction fees. If you look at that over the, like a 5-year period or whatever, in ETH, that ratio has gone from like 1,000th with ETH being 1,000th of BTC. Now the ETH transaction fees are more than 50 times wow, times that of BTC. So there's just more customers on Ethereum. So you have to say, like, no Bitcoiner seriously believes that Bitcoin will die and be replaced by an altcoin. But you have to just say, like, what's the risk you're willing to take? Like 2%, 3% that could happen versus like, having to worry about it really, or reducing that risk like 100-fold or something. That's the real risk, is that some kind of horrible existential crisis to Bitcoin, you know, that not like these tiny little, something in the code is like blah, blah, blah. All that is just concern troll. It's bike shedding.
Right on. All right. Well, I have one last question for you.
Cool, great. What is it?
Who's Satoshi Nakamoto?
Oh, well, I have a guess. I feel like that's not, he obviously valued his secrecy, although he did, I say he because he does declare his gender as male on the, some people get upset about that, but he self-identifies as male. And the, I think it's on SourceForge or whatever, you have to sign up, and he puts his birthday and there's the email, I don't remember the GX email or whatever it is, but he we know that it's a he, that they identify as he. So, but I think I know who it is, it's like, I don't think I should say, right? Because they value their privacy.
Okay.
I definitely think that there is something to be said for,
you don't have to say a name. That's fine. I understand.
Yeah, there has to be
that's actually very polite of you.
People, clearly he wanted it to be assessed on its own merits without his identity being a contributing factor, which is a very cool thing. There's a long history of that, you know, like really long, but like even relatively recently, there was like a Silence Do Good letters. That was Benjamin Franklin writing under a fake name. People would write under fake names, you know. That was a common thing in the Enlightenment, because if you said the wrong thing, you'd get like killed by some stupid king or whatever who would just kill you because they didn't like you. So people would do that type of thing. And that's like a neat thing to do. So good for them.
Right on. All right, Paul. Well, thank you so much for being with us. And
hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. You know, we're going to talk again, maybe a year from now, see where this is at, because we really need this. And, you know, it's hard for me to express how important this is for BTC and for the space at large, because it's one of those things that could have prevented the Bitcoin civil wars, in my opinion. And so we after the civil wars, we went off on our own ways, and you know, we're experimenting in the market with our own, you know, scaling modalities. But I feel as if almost if this actually were to take off, I think a lot of big blockers and a lot of people that went off to Monero and Zcash and Pirate Chain could once again look at BTC as a place to that they could call home again. So
yeah, I think the experimentation is very healthy, but I also think that it has created this division. In particular, it creates the infighting, the altcoiner people, like Bitcoiner altcoiner like relationship, is that everyone hates each other, and it wouldn't be that way at all if there were side chains. People would, like, no one would hate Roger Ver, for example. People would probably even say things like, in a parallel universe, there would probably be like something weird, like, I'm trying to think of who would be influential that wouldn't have, because today it also changed who becomes influential, but there'd be like someone, let's call it Peter McCormick. He would be on stage doing the MC for a Bitcoin conference, and he'd say, yeah, this is a really great Bitcoiner. He's a really smart guy. Vitalik Buterin or whatever. Exactly. And Vitalik would be, because he would never, there would never have been like an Ethereum or whatever, it would have been short-lived. Right. And all these people would just be Bitcoiners, like, you know, like, and what about our mission, like Bitcoin versus the banks?
Right.
People don't even think of the banks as the enemy anymore. They're just like, people are busy just saying, oh, I'm going to, we're going to laugh at whatever. Mm-hmm. Binance Smart Chain. It's like, we shouldn't really care about any of this. We should, you know, we had like, before the scaling war, we had like a mission to like change banking that people today don't really even talk about. You know, they talk about it a little bit, but
yeah,
not very much.
All right, Paul. Well, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate your time. And where can people find out more about you, and where can they follow you?
Well, yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm Truthcoin on Twitter. My last name is impossible to spell, so I had the project's Twitter and I took it over. Truthcoin. And on Truthcoin, I link to my pages. I have different pages for my projects. So I have truthcoin.info is my blog. I have DriveChain. .info, and I have bitcoinhivemind.com. And I think at this point, all those projects have like cool little like YouTube videos on the front page that are like pretty short, that kind of like explain some great stuff about them. And so, yeah, you should be able to find all the stuff from there.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in. And we will more likely follow up on this story, because like, this is huge. I mean, if this is something that, that takes off within BTC, it could really change the game for the whole space. Thank you, Paul, for being with us.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Peace, love, anarchy, guys. Take care.